current Ashes series in Australia has been a monumental disaster for England. They lost the fourth test earlier today by 8 wickets, having been totally annihilated in the previous 3. And writing about how the England players looked in the field at the start of the second Aussie innings, Tom Fordyce, who's the BBC cricket correspondent, said this on the BBC website. He said, "It was the body language, the lowered eyes, the slumped shoulders, the sense not of a single unit, but of 11 individuals lost and alone in the wide green spaces, all of whom seemed to be saying, I want to escape, but I can't." Wonder if you ever felt like that. Possibly not because you were a cricketer or any kind of a sports personality, but you found yourself in a completely overwhelming set of circumstances where you found yourself embarrassed or ashamed or under some kind of threat, and you wished there was the opportunity to escape. Did you ever feel like that? And if you did, how would you escape? What would escape look like? But when my daughter Esther was studying at St. Andrews University, I used to have that kind of a double trip to do each year. One would be in September and the other would be in June, with the car loaded to the roof. And I mean like loaded to the roof. There was no other space available inside the car. Get on the ferry, drive 4 hours all the way up to St. Andrews, maybe stop for a cup of coffee somewhere en route. Load all the stuff out of the car and then come back again to Belfast. And for me, those 2 trips every year became a form of escape, because I always made sure I arranged it in such a way that I had to take an overnight stay in St. Andrews. You could have really done it in a day, but I always kind of tried to figure it out. So I stayed at least one night in St. Andrews, and it was brilliant. It was brilliant for all sorts of reasons. It was brilliant for one reason, because it's a 4-hour drive, and I love driving. Okay, I know that's boring, but I really enjoy driving, and it's really good. And driving up through Scotland, you don't see anybody, because nobody actually lives in Scotland. It's completely empty, apart from Glasgow and 1 or 2 other places. There's absolutely nobody living between the boat and St. Andrews. And so you just drive up these roads, and it's great. And then when I got there, there's St. Andrews itself, which is an incredible place. This is St. Andrews Cathedral, or what's left of it. It's a medieval cathedral. It's beautiful, huge, enormous institution at one stage in its life. You can go around it and see it. You can find out about the story. Yeah, I know, I can see your eyes are already glazing over and that this is totally boring to you, but for me, this is absolutely fascinating. Further, the university there has a theology department, and it's in this kind of set of buildings that have a quiet close inside it, and it's just an amazing place to study medieval history or theology. It would be incredible. And so just to spend some time sitting in there, and now you're all fast asleep, that's great. And then there's a little coffee shop in an Anglican church there that has a bookshop in it. And I used to spend hours in that bookshop. I would find books I never could find anywhere in Northern Ireland. I'd buy 1 or 2 books and spend some time reading them while Esther was kind of getting all this stuff rearranged in wherever it was she was staying that year. For me, it was a huge and immense escape. And it was incredible. I didn't have to worry about the responsibilities I'd left behind. And this is now so long ago that mobile phones were barely like, well, I had a mobile phone, but nobody ever rang me on it. And so it was really great. It was an escape completely and entirely. However, as a people, we are very much in 2 minds about the idea of escape. Because on the one hand, there is something we call escapism. And we're all agreed that that's bad. Escapism is when we try to get away from reality entirely. We lose ourselves in alcohol or drugs or some other form of delusion. And we don't really face up to the world that's all around us or the responsibilities that we have or the problems and issues that are all around us. We just want to get away from it. It's all become far too much and we don't even want to think about it. And that's escapism, and it's not good. On the other hand, if a prisoner of war escapes from prison, that person is considered to be a hero. This is Colditz, and there are several famous escapes from Colditz and a film about it and various books and so on. And anybody who is an officer or a soldier, airman or seaman who finds himself in somewhere like this has a duty to try and escape. And if you do escape, you will be remembered forever afterwards for the incredible thing that you've done. So we have a kind of 2 different ways of looking at the idea of escape. which makes it all the more strange in a way that an angel of the Lord appears again to Joseph. This is the second of four such appearances that happened to Joseph in dreams, recorded in Matthew chapters 1 and 2. And on the second of those occasions, when the angel comes to him in a dream, says this to him, "Escape to Egypt." Now, there's not much surprise in the destination, okay? Because loads of times before in the history of God's people, they ended up leaving Palestine to go to Egypt with mixed results. Jacob's whole family, for example, years and years before this, Jacob's whole family went there to avoid famine. And it turned out to be a lifesaver for them, quite literally, because there was famine in Palestine itself, but there was plenty in Egypt. But it was a lifesaver in another way. Because when Jacob got there, he met the son he thought he had lost, Joseph, who was by this time a really important, high-ranking officer in the government of Pharaoh in the land of Egypt. And Jacob was able to go down to his grave in peace and contentment because he had finally caught up again with the son he thought he had lost. However, a number of years later, the presence of the people of God in Egypt turned into slavery and several generations of difficulty and adversity before God came to set them free. So Egypt was all right, it was okay, but it wasn't that great. In Jeremiah's day, later on in the Old Testament, once again, people of God escaped to Egypt. This time they escaped to Egypt to avoid the might of Babylon, which is going to destroy their country. And actually, Babylon destroyed their country anyway, and actually most of them didn't end up having a great time in Egypt either. So it had a mixed blessing too at that stage. So it seems strange that God would send an angel to Joseph in a dream to tell him to take the mother and child and escape to Egypt. But that's what God did. And that seems to underline for us something important, which is that real escape can be part of God's plan for our lives and a legitimate place to find ourselves on this journey that we've been on this year of trying to find out what it means to be a sent people. A place of escape is a legitimate place to be. In fact, the whole idea of escape is a metaphor in the Old Testament used to describe what salvation means. In Psalm 124, it says this, "We have escaped like a bird from the fowler's snare. The snare has been broken, and we have escaped." And the psalmist points out that escape is not an accident. "Our help is in the name of the Lord," he says after this. God enabled us to escape like a bird from a fowler's snare. Salvation is like something that you may have experienced in life, which is that you come into your kitchen, you're in your kitchen cupboard, digging in the kitchen cupboard, looking for someone you haven't used for quite a bit of time. And while you're getting this out of the kitchen cupboard, you notice those telltale little black droppings in the bottom of the kitchen cupboard, which means that some idiot left the back door open for too long on a winter's night, and you have company in the kitchen, which you don't want. Four-legged, furry, tiny, beautiful mice. And if you don't do something about it quickly, you won't have one mouse. You'll have several generations of mice. And that's not a pleasant place to be. So you set traps really carefully, okay? You bait them, okay? I used to bait them with cheese, but that's really not very good. They like chocolate much more. And I discovered that, you know, a finger of fudge is really good because it's soft in the middle. You kind of push it onto the prongs of a mouse trap. It works really well. And so you set the trap, and you come down the next morning expecting to have succeeded. You look at the mouse trap. The trap's sprung, the chocolate's eaten, and the mouse isn't there. Because sometimes the animals are more intelligent than the humans that are trying to catch them, all right? And the mouse gets the bait and it gets away. We have escaped like a bird from the fowler's snare. Salvation, that's what it's like. We're in a dire set of circumstances. The chances are we will be destroyed, but by some means or another, we escape. We are set free. That's a picture, a metaphor in the scripture of what salvation means. Escape, it means to get away. So it's maybe not that surprising, therefore, that the angel of the Lord comes to Joseph in a dream and said, "Joseph, you need to get away to a place of escape. Get up and go now." So what does escape involve? Three things. First thing is this, escape involves danger. See, God does not promise us escape from tiredness and exhaustion. because for that he has already made provision. He calls that provision Sabbath. He has built into our lives and into the way that the world works a series of rhythms which we ignore at our peril. There is that daily rhythm where out of every 24 hours we're supposed to sleep for about 8. Some people can do with less, some people need more, but on average human beings need to sleep between 7 and 8 hours a night. Okay, 1/3 of every day of your life you rest, you don't work. And then 1/7 of every week you rest, the command of God that one day should be set aside as a day of rest from all the work that we normally do. And on top of that, there's special holidays and breaks. How do we know that? Well, Jesus observed those. There's times in the New Testament record when it says that he's been really busy with his disciples. They've been teaching, they've been healing people, and they've been working. And Jesus said, we need to draw aside for a while. Sometimes it didn't happen because the crowds found out where he was going and they came and the holiday had to be canceled. But the very fact that Jesus planned to do it, that he invited his disciples to be part of it, that he didn't feel guilty about it, even though he is the Savior of the world on the most important mission that any human being was ever called to be a part of, Jesus still didn't think it was a problem for him, the Savior of the world, to take his friends and have a bit of time out. God doesn't give us escape from tiredness. For tiredness, he calls us to healthy patterns of rest, to build into our lives those rhythms without which our life will disintegrate. If you're overly tired tonight, maybe it's not just because you spent virtually 48 hours in Bethlehem last week and you're still knackered as a result of it. Maybe it's because for far too long there are no rhythms in your life. You don't observe what God has said. I went home today. My wife said to me at the lunch table, so what are you going to do about escape? Rhythms that God has given to us. That's what he has given to us for tiredness. But from danger, he offers us escape. See, there was a problem here. For this little family, Mary and Joseph and their newborn child, Jesus. The problem was not that Jesus might die as a result of Herod's hostility, okay? Jesus became a human being so that the sacrifice of his life would be possible. That's what the whole project was about. He became human so that he could lay it down for you and for me. The problem was that that life might be taken from him before the mission was completed. There would be a time to die, but it wasn't now. So he sends Joseph to Egypt with Mary and the baby so that that would not happen at this particular point in time. God secures what it was that he was doing. You see that in other parts of Scripture. Same thing happens with Elijah. Elijah escapes from danger to the mountain of the Lord. You know the story. He confronts the prophets of Baal, and he first of all puts them to shame, and then he puts them to the sword, and he demonstrates the power and presence of God among his people as the sacrifice is lit, and God demonstrates his presence and his power, and the people are restored to faith in the Lord. And Elijah is the leader up front in the midst of all of this. It's an incredible moment. And then he wakes up the next morning and realizes what he has done. And then the whole world looks entirely different. And he realizes that he is in danger. And God calls him away to the mountain to meet with him. Now, the danger that Elijah was in was not from Jezebel. Jezebel was not a danger to Elijah. For all the years of the famine in the land of Israel, God had hidden Elijah right under Jezebel's nose. He had taken him to live with a woman who had barely enough food left for herself and her son. But through the miracle of God's presence, that little bit of food she had lasted throughout the whole of the famine and fed not only her and her son, but the prophet as well. And where did she live? She lived in the city that Jezebel came from. God hid the prophet right under Jezebel's nose for all those years. Do you think that Jezebel was a problem for God? No. The danger Elijah was in didn't come from Jezebel. It came from himself. It came from himself because when he woke up that morning and realized what he had done, and realized the mess that he was in, potentially, with those in power in Israel, in his own generation, his faith began to falter. And it was the faltering of his own faith and the discouragement that he allowed to enter into his heart that put him in danger, and that's why God acted. That's why God takes him away to the mountain, to a meeting with himself, to deal with the real danger that Elijah was in. Paul says that that operation of God, providing a place of escape in the moment of danger, extends to things like, for example, temptation. He says in 1 Corinthians 10, every test that comes upon you is normal for human beings, but God is faithful. He won't let you be tested beyond your ability. Along with the testing, he will provide the way of escape so that you can bear it. Even in temptation, there is always a place of escape. That's what the word says. That's the Lord's promise, because the Lord provides the place of escape at the moment of danger. You may be about to do something which will endanger your mission or your ministry. And from that place that you may be about to go where the Lord does not want you to be, or from that person whose influence on your life the Lord does not want you to have, or from that intention of mind or heart that you have conceived that is not the Lord's plan for your life, he provides a place of escape. Escape is about danger. It's about being in a place in our spiritual life where our mission, the mission that we are on, this mission we've been talking about, it's not our mission, it's God's mission. He has invited us in to be a part of it. And we get to that point in our life where something in our lives, something we could do, somewhere we might go, someone we might end up being associated with, that undermines that mission and calls it into question and puts us in a position of danger, God provides from that moment a place of escape. Maybe you need that right now before you do what you know you shouldn't. The place of escape is about danger, but it's also about people. The escape that God provides always involves people. In the case of Jesus, the person was Joseph, his earthly family, and whatever friends or family Joseph had in Egypt, because the Lord told Joseph to take the child and his mom to Egypt. It just so happens that in Joseph's generation, one of the biggest Jewish communities in the empire was in Egypt. At that point in time, Alexandria, which is one of the largest cities in Egypt, probably about 1 million people at this particular point in time, it is estimated that probably about 1/3 of the population of that city, in other words, over 300,000 people at that point in time were Jews. Almost certainly, somewhere in that city was someone related to someone whom Joseph knew. And to those people, he took his wife and their son. God provided people who would be responsible to secure a place of safety for his son. He had heard what God said, and he protected Mary and Jesus. You see the same thing in the life of the Apostle Paul. Paul goes to Damascus. His intention is to destroy the church when he gets there. However, en route, he meets Jesus, whom he didn't think was even alive, which is kind of a big thing for him, and it transforms his life. It turns everything right around. And Paul, who came to Damascus to destroy the church, finds himself in the synagogue in Damascus telling everybody that Jesus is Messiah. This was an unexpected development. At the start, Jewish people listened to him, probably thought, well, this is a clever scam. Paul's pretending to be a Christian. That'll flush out a lot of these other people that believe in Jesus. Then he'll get them in. But then it became obvious after a day or two that Paul wasn't involved in any scam of any kind, that the Paul who was preaching Jesus as the Messiah was Paul. It was really him. When that happened, Paul found that he was in quite a little bit of hostility and animosity as a result of that. And so the difficulty is that he found almost right away that his life was under threat. this was something he had to get used to. He was going to spend basically all the rest of his ministry in this position, every day of his life, that he was under some sort of threat. But there were times when that threat was heightened above other times. And when that was the case, others often stepped in to protect Paul. For example, in Damascus, in Acts chapter 9, just after his conversion, when he's preaching in the synagogue, everything goes wrong. We read, his followers took him by night, lowered him in a basket through an opening in the wall. It just doesn't seem like Paul at all. Paul always strikes me as kind of being like an honorary Ulster man. You know, he's the kind of person who's always in your face. And for him to kind of go in a basket down a wall to escape from the, it just doesn't seem in character, really. Some of you will have seen Patrick Troughton. He's an actor, probably most famous for this, which is Doctor Who. He was Doctor Who between 1966 and 1969. Of course, you won't remember that unless you're kind of my age, but he was, take it from me anyway, okay? But I actually remember him for something he did 6 years before that, in 1960. He was this, Paul of Tarsus, in a BBC television series that ran for a number of weeks at that time. I remember watching it as a child. And I can remember so many of the scenes from that, but one of the scenes I remember more than any other was the scene in which it showed Paul in a basket being dropped down by his friends through the wall in Damascus and met by other friends at the bottom and taken away in the middle of the night. And it kind of really stuck in my mind as a child. Now, Paul had friends who helped him to escape when he was in trouble. God makes escape possible through people. Our salvation does not come by religious ritual. It does not come through observing a number of religious acts, being involved in religious activities and events, playing our part in some religious organization or other. Our salvation came in a person, Jesus himself. When we need to escape, God provides people who make that escape possible. People don't escape. They need to be escaped. And that's what happens in our lives. God puts people in our lives who help us to escape from danger. When we talk about 2020 vision in this congregation, we usually mean our vision, our strategic vision for the next number of years leading up to 2020, if any of us live long enough to see it. And that's what we think about. For me, 2020 vision also means something else. It means a conference that I co-organized with Trevor Morrow in 1997 for our denomination in Coleraine. It was a really big event. We planned to do it bigger than some of the other conferences because we had hired the New Horizon tent, so that meant we needed to find thousands of people where these things normally only needed hundreds of people. And so it was a big step of faith in all sorts of ways. So we decided we'd take a weekend away with the team who were going to organize this just to seek God and try and get guidance and encouragement and help about what we should do with this event that had been placed into our hands. And so when we were going to go away for the weekend, we were going to obviously have some sessions when we would, you know, when we would try and think about ideas and write stuff up on flip charts and kind of divide into groups and all kinds of stuff. But we also thought it would be important to spend some time seeking God. So Ken Newell, who was one of the guys on the team, I asked him if he would kind of lead prayer at the weekend away. And up to that point in my life, prayer for me mostly meant something that you did personally in devotions or someone that you did in a prayer meeting at church. And prayer meetings at church were a varied kind of levels of interest. If you've ever been to a church prayer meeting, you know what I mean. Sometimes fairly hard to keep awake. Other times you're thinking about what you're going to be doing in 10 minutes when it's over and all that sort of stuff. So they'd never been the most exciting meetings I'd ever been in, although I'd been in loads by that time. But when we went away on the weekend, Ken did prayer in a way I'd never really seen done before. He divided us up into smaller groups. He invited us to share with one another where we were in terms of our faith at that point in time. Even the people who are meant to be the kind of head key leaders of this team had to sit down with other people who were on their team and maybe say, actually, for me, it's not as good as it seems. We had to talk about that and allow other people to come and pray with us and minister to us. And something happened to me. I don't know if it happened to other people, but something happened to me in those prayerful moments in a small B&B in Portrush that weekend, which was that the conference changed for me from being something that was about the numbers we could get along. Could we fill that tent every night? Could we make it a success? Could we get speakers who were really going to challenge people and give them something to think about? The whole event was completely transformed in those moments for me into something which I realized became a desire to provide an environment in which people could meet with God. We came to understand that we could get thousands of people into that tent every night, get the most amazing speakers from all across the globe, and run a really successful event administratively. But if everybody came and went away and didn't meet with God, there was no point. We escaped from a huge danger, the danger of thinking that organizational success was what the event was about. We were rescued from that danger and brought into the understanding what this event had to be about was to provide people with an opportunity to be confronted by the power and presence of the living God. And that escape happened through one person that God provided at the right moment of time. You may be a means of escape for somebody else. There is something you can say, something you can do, some friendship, support, advice, help that you can offer to someone that can change their life, that can take them to a place of escape and enable them to avoid a huge spiritual danger they currently face. You may be in spiritual danger. You know you are tonight. There is somebody in your circle of friends, acquaintances, family. There is someone there the Lord has placed there. It may be one of the members of our prayer ministry team whom you could come to for prayer at the end of the service tonight. You could come and say, look, I'm in a bad place. I really need the Lord to show up for me. And maybe the person in that prayer ministry team is that person. Escape is about people. God rescues you through people. And finally, escape is about limits. Escape has its limits. The place that Joseph was sent to with his wife and the baby was never meant to be a permanent residence. Joseph, who was told in a dream to go to Egypt, has another dream some months later to tell him to go back. And then another dream after that to tell him when he gets there not to go where he thought about going, but to go to Nazareth instead. See, the Messiah could not fulfill his mission in Egypt. That was not going to be possible. To fulfill his mission, he was going to have to be in Palestine. He was going to have to be where he could confront the authorities of his own nation, where he could heal and teach and reveal the power, presence, and glory of the living God, where he could be found guilty in a Roman court and crucified upon a cross. And all of that could only happen in Palestine. He couldn't be in Egypt forever. It was only a place of escape for a short season. Elijah is taken away to the mountain of the Lord. But when he gets there, God meets with him after having helped him there, having fed him and rested him and got him through 40 days and 40 nights to the place where God was. God comes, meets with him, talks with him. What does God do? He said, Elijah, it's really nice to see you. Now go back. You got work to do. And he lists the work that needs to be done. He said, that's what I called you for. I didn't call you to be here. It's really good for you to be here. Hope you've enjoyed it while you're here. Now go home. Go and do the stuff I appointed you to do. And he renews his mission and sends him back. And those three intimate companions of Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, they wanted to stay there. Because now just for a few moments in this place, they see Jesus for who Jesus really is. Not just the carpenter. Not just the incredible teacher. Not even just the miracle worker. But the glory of the living God himself. Here he is, and they want to stay here. But Jesus said, no, we need to get back. We can't complete the mission here. So they come back to earth, quite literally. They come back down the mountain, into the crowds, and into the bustle, and into all the challenges of life that was in front of them in the ministry, because the place of escape was just for a short amount of time. See, because that is so, it means that you and I must not be afraid to take God's provision of the place of escape. Sometimes we do actually need to get away. Sometimes there are issues in our lives, there are situations that we face, there are burdens and responsibilities which place us in a position of danger, and we need to get away. And it's okay to go away. It is okay to take that opportunity. Why? Because it's not for the rest of your life. It's just for a period of time. Joseph did not hesitate when the command of God came, even though it came through an angel in a dream. I mean, he woke up the next morning, or woke up there and then. What do you make of that? What do you think about it? You wake up in the middle of the night after a dream. Would you get up and move house? Maybe you have. I don't know. But I think it's kind of unlikely. But that's effectively what Joseph did. It says, so he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left. He didn't wait till the morning. He got up there and then. He wakened his wife and they got the child bundled up with whatever belongings they could take with them and got on some sort of beast and off they went. He wasn't afraid to go because it was a place of escape. It wouldn't be his permanent residence. He was equally ready to leave there for when the time came to come back. It says in verse 21, notice the similarity between these words as the slide changes. So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. He just gets up and goes back. And when Elijah receives the word of the Lord in the cave that he has traveled so far to get to, he gets up and he goes back. And when Paul is in Tarsus during those years of escape, away from all the hustle and bustle of the ministry that he would one day occupy, he didn't wait a second when Barnabas turned up from Antioch to say, we need your help in Antioch. Can you come? Paul got up and went right away. The place of escape is such a blessing, but it's a place that has limits. It's only a blessing for a time. It is not the place of your mission. It seems to me there are two great dangers about the place of escape. The first great danger is this, that you don't take it. That you go on wandering on into a direction which the Lord is warning you is not a good place to be, not a good place to go. And he provides the opportunity of escape. There are a person or persons in your circle who are offering you alternatives, who are calling you away from that, who are saying to you, look, you need to take a break from that. You need to step aside from that. You need not to do that, not to go there, not to be that. Danger is you don't take it. It's okay to take it. It's okay to set aside responsibility for a time. It's okay not to have to do that thing that you've been doing for years and years for the church, and it's really, really important. But actually, God has said it's become a snare in your life, and you need to set it down. It's okay to set it down. Danger is you don't take it. Place of escape is there for a purpose. There are limits on it, so it's okay to take it. The other danger, however, is the opposite one. Because maybe a number of years ago you did take the place of escape. You were in a bad place in your life. There were issues and difficulties. And God offered you a place where you could be refreshed and renewed, where the danger could subside, so that now you are safe in his love and in his arms. The only problem is you never left the safe place. You never came back from the place of escape. And I want to challenge you tonight, if that's you, there was a time in your life when you were right in the middle of the mainstream of the mission. You were involved in it right up to your ears, and everybody knew you were. And God's Spirit was flowing in and out of your life, and things were happening around you. But then problems arose, and you stepped out of the stream, and you never stepped back. And I think tonight God is saying to some people, it's time to step out again. It's time to leave the safe place and get back in the mission, because that's what God called you to do. Jesus could not be the Savior of the world in Egypt. To be the Savior of the world, he had to get back to Palestine. You cannot complete the mission of God where you are right now. You need to get back into the mainstream of what God is calling you to. The place of escape is an amazing place, but it's only for a time. And now is the time to leave.